Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, February 28, 2019. Welcome back to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. And before we get into some of the weekend's best games and some stuff on the Big East, I did want to acknowledge that Iowa, subsequent to our Wednesday morning podcast, did suspend Fran McCaffrey for two games after he reportedly called an official a cheating MF-er following a loss at Ohio State. Our last podcast was recorded after Fran went bananas, but before Iowa suspended him. We both on that podcast that was recorded Wednesday morning thought that he deserved a suspension, and he got it. Two games. Norlander, we won't spend much time on this, but let me ask, is the two-game suspension, is it appropriate?
It is, and it's more than what I expected. You know, on the previous pod, I actually thought that he was not going to face this kind of discipline, but good to see. After we recorded and before the news came down, I did hear from a Big Ten coach who said this is almost certainly going to be a suspension, and then like 30 minutes later the news came out that indeed that it was. It's the right call. It's the right number of games. No issue with it whatsoever. Two thoughts on this. One, McCaffrey had a press conference there, and as I watched what he said in the press conference, I had, you know, I was just thinking back to our very podcast conversation. Like, when he was describing how regretful he was and how he got caught up in the moment, like, he is a completely reasonable human being. But the fact is, he has had these bouts of anger that happen in games, and in this case, after the game, away from the public, that that makes for, you know, a really fascinating case study into how the mentality of coaching for these guys, for so many of them, can really just change who they are. With McCaffrey, it just seems more exaggerated than others, but I don't have an issue with that. And what's also interesting about this is just purely from a resume standpoint. So they won't have McCaffrey for the home game Saturday at Rutgers, and then Iowa plays at Wisconsin on Thursday. The committee is not going to take into account that kind of suspension, and like, it's, if they lose, they lose. It's not even like a player injury situation. So if anyone was curious, like, what if Iowa loses both of those games, they don't have McCaffrey, will they be afforded the same kind of discount that Duke without Zion might be? No, they will not. Absolutely not. Talked to committee members in the past about this. The same kind of thing applies when you have a player discipline issue. It's not necessarily the same as having the unfortunate luck or bad luck of a player getting injured. So just keep that in mind. And then weirdly, by the way, you know, Iowa is a quality win for teams out there. If it continues to dip, Iowa's flirting between quad 1, quad 2 status if you got them at home or not. So there are some ripple effects to the McCaffrey suspension.
I thought he said all of the right things. You know, he took responsibility. He apologized. He didn't try to explain it or rationalize it. And I can't speak to whether he's being sincere or not. But I know that once somebody, and I think this is almost in all walks of life, you know, once somebody says, you know what, I was wrong, and I'm sorry I did that, and I apologize, and I'm going to do my best to not do that again, I don't know what else there is to talk about. You know, like whether it's in a personal relationship or in a professional relationship, or, you know, when it comes to, you know, people like us having discussions about things that go on within the sport of college basketball. We could spend 20 minutes the other morning talking about how out of line Fran was and what type of discipline he deserved. And I, like you, didn't expect it to be two games. I thought it might be nothing other than like a reprimand. But if it were an actual suspension, it would be a game. So I think Iowa, at the very least, I mean, reasonable minds could disagree on this. Maybe somebody thinks it should be for the rest of the year. But I think two is perfectly reasonable discipline. It proves the point that I think the school was trying to prove. And then when France, you know, so once that's done, you know, we spent all the time talking about what we thought should happen, why he was out of line, why coaches act this way, even if, as you put it, Fran is an exaggerated example. But once the discipline comes down and it seems appropriate, and once Fran says, you know what, I was wrong, I accept this punishment, and you know, I apologize, and I was out of line, and, you know, I'm gonna work to be better, I sort of say, okay, good, and I hope you are. I don't know what else to say other than that, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty much there. You know, eyes will be on him for the rest of the season into the Big Ten tournament. Just, you know, it's one of those things where it just has become a thing. And so if Iowa gets a bad call, you know, anyone who's broadcasting the game, the director, is going to have a camera trained on him just to see if he loses his cool or not. But two games, totally fair. And, we just move on. Iowa's still obviously going to be in the NCAA tournament. Big picture, this has been a year of progress for them. But, you know, another unfortunate incident, one that could have totally been avoided by McCaffrey, wasn't. And we'll see if this time he's actually changed for good, because you can't have anything like this again. If you do, then it's like you are what you are. I mean, many will say he is what he is at this point, period. But maybe something like this, which was different from all the other ones in that he was caught accusing an official of being crooked, will be the thing that finally changes him. And maybe this is the last time he ever has any kind of public embarrassment.
Well, now people will be watching for it. You know, like, there's going to be a million basketball games played this weekend. And if Scott Drew gets out of hand, or, Brad Brunell gets out of hand, it won't be on Twitter. It'll just be like these things happen in basketball games sometimes. But if Fran, in the next game or any game, the rest of the season or next season, every time he has a moment, it will be a thing because of this moment. And I really do think it maybe gets to a point where, okay, you get a 2-game suspension for this one. Do something else. All right, well, now we're going to sit you down for 10 games. Do something else. Okay, maybe we're going to find a new basketball coach. And so I hope that he's sincere when he says he's going to work on handling those moments a little more maturely than he has handled those moments. And perhaps, like, it's not a maturity thing. I shouldn't use that word. It's just that he loses it in the moment. I think you said use the phrase fits of anger. He has fits of anger that are not normal. And if he really is going to work on that, I hope he's successful. I wish him luck. Before we get into the weekend's games, one interesting score from Thursday night just went final not too long before we started recording this. Xavier 84, St. John's 73, and that game was played in the state of New York. So that's a road win for Xavier, a home loss for the Johnnies, and they're now 8-8 in the Big East. Xavier also 8-8 in the Big East. It's been a weird league this season. There was one point where, there were only two teams. Well, I guess we're back there now. I was going to say there was a point where there were only two teams above 500 in the league, Marquette and Villanova, and with St. John's taking this loss and dropping to 8-8, that means there are now only two teams in the league with league records above 500. That's not normal.
Weird league. One coach told me earlier this week, it has to be going in because the Big East totally stinks. No one's saying it. The teams are terrible. If Xavier is able to go in and do this kind of damage to the top of the league, and this is prior to the St. John's win, it's just not that good of a league. Like Villanova. Use the phrase smoke and mirrors. I don't know. I can't speak to that for sure or whatever, but it's hard to disagree with in this moment. Weirdly, I can't remember if I mentioned it on the last podcast or not. I know I mentioned it on CBS Sports HQ. The Big East, prior to Thursday, was the only conference in America in which all of its teams were above 500, but it's definitely taken a big step back. And now, I mean, you know, you had Marquette lose at Villanova on Wednesday night. That was weird because Marquette went without a field goal in the final 5 minutes of the game. I feel safe in saying Marquette is not going a five-minute stretch the rest of the season where it doesn't get a field goal. So credit to Villanova and Jermaine Samuels. Like, big win for them. There's only one game separating them in the standings and all that stuff. But for St. John's, like, they're going to get in the tournament because they have to. I mean, I think they would project – after this loss, Parrish, I think I'd have him as a 10, I think. And then after that, I don't know what to make of this league. Georgetown, Xavier. Like, Xavier has – they're suddenly, like, just okay after what I thought they were the worst team in the league 2.5 weeks ago. And now they have moved up. Granted, you know, they're what? They're level. They're 8-8 overall. But between them, Georgetown, Seton Hall, Butler, Creighton – Providence, and then maybe DePaul. I don't know. It's a complete jumble. Just not a great year for the Big East at all. And yet it is comfortably, and I mean comfortably, ahead in the KenPom conference ratings of the Pac-12 and the American. And it's not a good year for the Big East. So maybe that's a good thing, is you can be this average and still easily rated as a top five league in America. But that's just a bad – it's a bad loss for St. John's. It's playing itself out of a seed situation where it has no business being. With the talent they have, it's a problem. So just worth mentioning there. Maybe Xavier is going to be, you know, a bid thief. Who knows? You know, Travis Steele in year one, he's getting it right. You know, he's a former Chris Mack assistant. And Steele and Mack have gone opposite ways the past 2 weeks here because Louisville can't win a game. And Xavier's now won five straight to really turn its season around. So good for him. But for overall, GP, Big East, it's just a big bucket of meh.
Well, how about this? And this says, I think, more about the rest of college basketball and the mediocrity around the bubble than maybe it does even about the Big East. So St. John's is now 8-8 in the Big East. And you and I agree. The Big East is garbage this year. Like, I don't know that there's a great team at the top, and I don't know how many good teams are actually in it. I mean, I you know, I've got Marquette in the top 10, so I guess we're calling them one of the 10 best teams in the country, and you might not call them that. It's certainly debatable. The computers do not say that they're one of the 10 best teams in the country, but maybe they're great or at least really good and have the potential to make a deep run in the bracket. But Villanova is flawed to its core. You can't lose the type of games they've lost this season, both in November and December and as recently as the past couple of weeks, and be considered a quote-unquote good basketball team. So St. John's is 8-8 in that league and safely in the field. Safely. Like, Jerry Palm's got them as an 8 seed. Now, it hasn't been updated to reflect this loss to Xavier, but that ain't going to drop them to the bubble. I mean, it might drop them to a 9, maybe, as you put it, a 10. But St. John's is still safely in the NCAA tournament with an 8-8 record in a mediocre/bad Big East. That's how soft the bubble is this season, or how bad college basketball in the middle is this season.
I agree. It's funny. For our next podcast on Sunday, I didn't want to get too much into the bubble on this one because I wanted to wait for Saturday and Sunday's quota of results before we really took a tour, because we haven't done that too much, and I think that's to our testament here, because sometimes I think we can get a little too caught up in bubble stuff on February 7th when there's, by the pure nature of that, there's just so much stuff that has to sort out, and teams can just fly off never to be seen again, or they can vault out before maybe dipping back down into some troublesome territory in the start of March. But you're right, and bubble's bad every year, but I'm looking at what I'm seeing this season perish, and I've never been more convinced that we are going to be cruising with 5, 6, and 7 seeds into the second round. Obviously, there will be upsets and all that. I get that. But to me, if you really take a look through Palm's bracketology, look at the bracket forecast, and you see, and you check out, and you see, okay, who are the teams along the 11 line, the 12 line? Well, you've got Florida, you've got Temple, Minnesota, Alabama, Seton Hall, Ohio State, okay? And then who do you got in the 5-6-8 area? You've got K-State, okay, they're near the top of the Big 12. Iowa State, a little inconsistent, but you know what? As talented as any team in that league. Florida State is coming off its longest win streak in ACC history, and it's a good ACC this year. Even the teams that might be continuing to climb up, like Mississippi State back on track, Virginia Tech, even Iowa, with all of its faults, is a really elite offensive team. And then if you want to even get into it, like Buffalo, if you want to put them in there, they're damn dangerous and might be better than the seed line they get placed on. And the same thing could be said of Cincinnati, maybe even a Washington. So when I look at the way that, again, it's still a blurry picture, and it will crystallize here in about a week and a half, 2 weeks. I will love to be wrong, because I love how the bracket can do this to us every single season. But I can't remember a year, even when like the bubble was relatively bad, you know, any year in the past 7 or 8 GP, I can't remember ever feeling like, wow, I am so much more in on the teams that would fall to the 5, 6, 7 line versus like upset potential of the 10, 11, 12s. Now check back with me in 2 weeks I'm sure when my opinion completely changes. But it's it is certainly underwhelming this season. It feels like as much as, if not more than, any over the past 5 or 6.
It certainly does feel that way. You know, if you and I look at these projected brackets every time they're updated, because it's literally our job to be able to know this stuff and talk about this stuff. But I'll tell you, if you're just a casual college basketball fan who follows the sport on a very surface level, like you watch the games and you know who's in the top 25 and who isn't, if you go show them who like the last four teams are in that are in, they'll go, really? I thought that team was garbage. They're in the NCAA tournament? Like, yeah. the idea that Minnesota is safely in, and I'm happy for and I don't know if they're safely in, but they're projected in right now. I mean, I'm happy for Richard Pitino, but like they really haven't done much this season. You know, Alabama, like in the bracket right now, 17-11 record, I think. That's at least what the last update on Palm's bracket. Let me see where they actually are right now. Yeah, 17-11 overall, 8-7 in the SEC. Lost three of their last five, and in the bracket. Like, if you just ask somebody, how's Alabama this year? They'd go, I don't know, not good. Well, they're in the NCAA tournament as of today, and it feels that way about, like, maybe eight or nine teams, yeah. Which seems excessive relative to other years. You and I agree. The bubble is always one of the things I've said for years now. If you don't get into if you're in a power conference and you don't get in the NCAA tournament because you have opportunities in your league to build a resume, if you can't get in, you're just not good. Like no excuses, because we don't leave good teams out of the tournament. Not a 68-team tournament. We don't leave good teams out. We put bad teams in. We put average teams in. College football playoff, we leave good teams out. NCAA tournament, we put bad teams in. And yeah, we'll have bubble talk, plenty of bubble talk throughout the month of March, leading up to Selection Sunday. We're going to preview this weekend's top games momentarily, but first, I wanted to thank those of you who have subscribed and rated the podcast 5 stars, left nice comments. I know I usually do it at the end of the podcast, but I feel like by then, sometimes you guys know, like, that is the end of the podcast, so it's just like stop and move on. And I want to make sure that, I show proper appreciation, because the numbers are way up. The ratings are way up. The nice comments are coming by the day. And it really does help us from a Apple Podcast perspective. It helps us with our bosses and all that stuff, but it helps us, like it makes the podcast more visible and makes it easier to find for folks. And so you guys have been great about doing that. And I did want to give a special shout out to Quinn, the sixth grader, because we got this note earlier this week, Norlander. It said, I give this a 5-star rating because this podcast always keeps me updated on college basketball. I am only in the sixth grade, but I want to have a good basketball career because my dad was great and so was my grandpa. And I hope this podcast will keep on going, and I want to get a good scholarship to go to Duke. Duke is my favorite basketball team. I love the podcast. Keep up the good work. I love it. 5 stars. That's from Quinn, the sixth grader. And it just sort of made me smile that there's a sixth grader. I always envision what our audience looks like, probably a lot like us. But the idea that there's a sixth grader out there subscribed to the podcast, it just made me smile a little bit. I like the idea that we got a kid in the audience, and I'm assuming Quinn's not the only one. So special shouts to Quinn.
Shout out to Quinn. Hey, that's a great thing, man. Getting on a sixth grader logging on a 5-star review. If he can do it, any of you can. And
yes. Yeah, I don't want to hear any excuses from you seventh graders out there. If Quinn, the sixth grader, could do it, then any of you seventh graders and up ought to be able to handle it as well. So please, go subscribe via Apple Podcasts. It's easy to do. 5 stars would be appreciated. Leave a nice comment, and you can. Like I said, we really do appreciate it. So, big games this weekend. And we'll just sort of take them in, honestly, whatever order I've put them in my computer file right here. We'll start with the biggest. Number 4, Kentucky at number 7, Tennessee. Tip is scheduled for Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's America's most awarded network. It's the network of stars. Right now, Jerry Palm's got Kentucky as a 1 seed. He's got Tennessee as a 2 seed. It is not hyperbole to suggest this could determine not only who is a 1 seed in the NCAA tournament, but also who is an SEC champion, because we've got a 3-way tie at the top right now between Kentucky, Tennessee, and Will Wade's LSU Tigers. And obviously, the loser of this game is going to be in a little bit of a bad spot, because they will at least be 1 game behind the team that beat them, and perhaps also a game behind LSU.
Yep, and I do think that either Kentucky or Tennessee will ultimately wind up with a 1. I believe that will wind up being the case. If for it not to be the case, Tennessee has to lose this game, and then Kentucky needs to drop like 2, maybe 3 games to move off the 1 line. I don't think that's likely to happen. Fascinating game here. What I missed there, so there's a little bit of a subplot going into this. So Tennessee had some, maybe it was after their win, or they had some media availability earlier this week, and they had Admiral Schofield had, you know, made passing mention of the fact that, like, Grant Williams and Tennessee are supposedly afraid of P.J. Washington. Now, when I covered the game in Lexington 2 weeks back, if that was said, I just, you know, amidst doing HQ stuff, writing the column, I missed that entirely. Or if it was said the next day, I just don't remember there being a thing about Tennessee being afraid of P.J. Washington. So forgive me if that wound up actually being something of a running theme and I totally missed it. But what I do love is that you got a little bit of this going into this game because, frankly, college basketball could use a little bit more of just some verbal chippiness and just a little bit of, you know, pregame trash talk. Tennessee will not be scared, I assure you of that. Now, P.J. Washington has been the most valuable player for Kentucky this season. He's been tremendous. I'm going to take Tennessee to win this one, though, and I'm going to take them to win in a good game but in a comfortable way. So something along the lines of 77-71, but Kentucky, it never feels like in the final 5 minutes of the game it's really theirs to take back and steal on the road. So I'll take the Vols, and in doing so, create a very interesting conversation for the one seed in general. Just let me digress real quick here, GP, because we've got the one seed this weekend, I think, is going to push the conversation even further as it does. But I love that we have right now a lot of viable teams still jumping toward the one line, trying to get there. Obviously, right now it's a consensus. I think it's a consensus. It's Virginia, Gonzaga, Duke, Kentucky. But in my opinion, Michigan State, Tennessee, of course, North Carolina, Houston, Michigan, and even this is a long shot, but two long shots, I think. If LSU never lost again till the end of the season, and if Texas Tech didn't lose again, they would have a case. I'm not saying they would get there, but you have essentially, what, 11, 12 teams that if they get there, they're not going to. These teams always lose. But again, whereas I said before, Parrish, like, I couldn't remember a season in recent memory where the 5, 6, and 7s look so much better than the 10s and 11s and 12s, like the gap was so huge. I remember last year the chase for a 1 was pretty interesting, but not this deep. I'm loving that we still have this. There's plenty of time for turnover here, and what we get this weekend, Kentucky, Tennessee most notably, but even outside of that, will still help shape that. Heading into the league tournaments, I still feel like at least 2, if not 3, 1 seeds will wind up being up for grabs.
So the origin of the scared of P.J. Washington stuff is a quote post-game from Kentucky's blowout of Tennessee at Rupp Arena. Tyler Hero was asked about P.J. Washington. I'm not sure of the exact question, but his answer was, quote, "I think they're scared of P.J., honestly. Scared of P.J. I think a lot of people are scared now that he's scoring like he is and doing what he's doing." And so that clearly got back to the Tennessee locker room, because the scene from, you know, their impressive late last minute win at Ole Miss earlier this week, reporters were talking to Grant Williams about, you know, Kentucky coming up next. And that's when Admiral Schofield walked by and said, "Hopefully we're not scared of PJ this time." And it's a clear, you know, reaction to the Tyler Hero quote from the first game. And Grant Williams was subsequently asked more about it, and he was asked for his thoughts. Like, what did you think when you heard Tyler Hero say you were scared, or Tennessee was scared of P.J. Washington? And he said, quote, "It made me laugh. Tyler said it after the game. I just laughed. I have respect for P.J. I respect the world out of him. He's talented." And then somebody said, "But again, scared?" And he said, "No, I'm not scared." And so I'm with you. This is very minor stuff. Like, Joel Embiid and Russell Westbrook would have a much better back and forth, but I like this kind of stuff when guys are, when, you know, are personally invested in this, like taking offense to what other people are saying and then speaking back on the subject, not hiding from it, not talking around it. Admiral Schofield making a point to bring it up in advance of the game. Like, I love all that stuff.
I do too, and Schofield is one of the better quotes in college basketball among players out there. Getting to talk with him a couple weeks back, and no shrinking violet. I love that. GP, who are you going to take in this one? Are you going to ride with me, or are you going to make it even more interesting and try and you know, split the vote?
Anybody who listens to me predict games knows that A, I'm not very good at it, and B, I almost never take a team of this caliber I almost never go against a team of this caliber at home. Like, I've probably mumbled these words a billion times. Like, I'll just take the home team. You know, in this game, I'd just take the home team. I think Kentucky and Tennessee are comparable. I think they're comparable basketball teams. I think they're both legitimate Final Four contenders. I could see either winning the national championship. I won't pick either to win the national championship, I don't think, but I could see either winning the national championship. Like, you don't have to have a big imagination to imagine that. And because I think they're comparable, I'll take the team that's at full strength and inside its home arena. Tennessee hasn't lost there all season. I don't think Saturday's going to be the first time.
Okay. I'm with you, and in doing so makes the race that much more interesting. And we'll see if Grant Williams, if he can come up big and continue, you know, his first team All-American push, I think he's going to have a huge game.
We need PJ Washington if we really want to get this thing going the way it needs to go. How good would it be if PJ Washington, you know, like when Kentucky comes out the tunnel just before tip-off, if he's wearing like the scream mask or something?
I had no idea where you were going with that, but yeah, it'd make for a hell of a meme, a gif, I guess. But he's not PJ Washington. PJ Washington, does he know? Does PJ Washington even know that the movie Scream exists? I'm going to say no.
I'm gonna say no.
It came out, it 100% came out before he was born. Now he probably. If you showed him what the mask is, like, have you ever seen this mask before? It's probably a yes. Like, it entered into the mainstream. It's entered into the culture and all that. But it's not that whether he's seen it or not. I'm like almost all in on him never having watched Scream. It's, does he even know that there was a movie named Scream made in GP? Do you know what year it was?
Ooh, I think I
Trivia
was.
time.
Okay.
I'm gonna say
Scream.
1997. I feel like I was at that point.
I feel like I was still in high school, and I graduated high school in 95. So I'm gonna say Scream came out in 1994.
We're both. So Scream 2 came out in 97. Scream movie, I think it's 95. 96. Wow. So Scream was 96. Scream 2 turned. No, it had to be 98. Okay. Wow. Look at that. So I was actually close. The Scream came out in December 20th, on December 20th, 1996. How about that?
Almost 97.
Almost 97. Just 12 days out from that, but yeah, I'm gonna say that PJ Washington, I don't even know how we landed on this, but he is unaware. If anyone, if hey, listen, if anyone that's covering this game, if Kentucky wins, and even after that, if you want to work this in and get back to us and be like, hey, are you aware of a movie starring Drew Barrymore, Neve Campbell, was it Matthew Lillard's in there? Who else is in there? Who is Courtney Cox and David Arquette? Drop
Yeah,
any of those names on him. I can't even remember. I remember that many cast members.
I remember Courtney Cox and David Arquette. I remember both them being in it. That's all I remembered. I did not remember.
How do you not remember Drew Barrymore? She's in the most memorable scene of the movie.
Opening scene, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you would have asked me 5 minutes ago to name people who were in Scream, for whatever reason, I would not have remembered Drew Barrymore. But then when you said Drew Barrymore, I can remember the scene. It's the opening scene.
That's correct. Really, one of the better opening scenes of any movie in the 90s, I think. And it was also, this has turned into a movie podcast. We'll move along. But it kind of reinvigorated the horror genre, and at the same time, it kind of broke that fourth wall, and it was, you know, it was winking at its audience throughout. I thought it was actually. I think that movie probably holds up. It's been at least 15 years since I've watched it, but I bet that it still holds up for what it was.
What I remember being wild about it, and I might be misremembering this, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but like I think at the time, Drew Barrymore might have been the biggest name in the film. And like, when in movies do you kill your
Yes.
biggest name in the first 10 minutes? Like,
You're
that's
right.
just not a normal thing. Like, the, you know, Scream starring Drew Barrymore, boom, she's dead 10 minutes in. Like, that way, I remember that being jarring. Like, really? Drew
Yeah.
Barrymore's already gone? I remember that being a thing.
You're
Do you remember that?
absolutely right. And she probably was the biggest, but if it wasn't her, it was Courtney Cox, because you're entering like third season of Friends at that point. Like, star has already ascended, but absolutely, what you're remembering is correct. The idea that you would kill her off that way right at the top of the movie, it was a different approach from what you would expect seeing movies back then. So where do we go from here?
Okay, just one more idea. Pre-game,
okay.
PJ, okay, doesn't have a screen mask because perhaps that breaks some sort of uniform protocol. But sneaks up behind Grant Williams like you do sometimes and then just goes, boo, and sees it, see if he flinches. See if he could actually scare Grant Williams. You know?
Make him afraid.
Like, could he actually scare Grant Williams, even for just a moment? Grant Williams says, I'm not scared of P.J. Washington. But what if P.J. Washington sneaks up behind him, like in a hallway at Thompson Bowling, and then hits one of those, boo! Could he get him to flinch a little bit? And then he'd say, ha, 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 I knew you were scared of me.
What's the second best game of Saturday?
The second best game, I don't know if it's the second best game, but it's the second one I've got on my list. ESPN's College Game Day going to originate from Houston this weekend. We'll get to that in a second. First, check this out.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. So it's UCF at number 8 Houston. Tip is scheduled for Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on ESPN. But even in the morning, Houston is going to be featured prominently because Game Day did announce earlier in the week that that's where Game Day is going to originate from. And we don't usually talk about where Game Day is going to originate from. It doesn't really matter much. But I do think it's an incredible accomplishment for Kelvin Sampson and his staff. And the players and the team and that administration, like, let's just lump them all together. You know, Houston has been a mostly nothing basketball program since, you know, the Phi Slamma Jamma days and Clyde Drexler and Akeem Olajuwon. And Kelvin Sampson has built that thing into a team that was, ranked basically all of last season. It, you know, and has been ranked much of this season, is now in the top 10, and built it to a point where College Game Day, which is the biggest, Saturday morning television show connected to college basketball, has built it to a point where they said, we're going there. Yeah, Kentucky's at Tennessee. We're going to Houston, an American Athletic Conference school, to highlight a game between the team that was projected to win the league, UCF, and the team that looks like it's now going to win the league, and then who knows what else, Houston. I just thought, I even texted Kelvin earlier in the week just to say, hey, man, congrats on that. That's a big deal for that school, you know?
Yeah, and I've been driving the Houston bus all season long. Big deal. I like seeing that. And this is also, so the football version did UCF game day back during football season. So the Americans got into, prime spot here, and that's not a typical decision for game day. Houston is the only one-loss team left in college basketball. What it's been able to do has been amazing this season because it lost a lot of important players last season. Have documented some of this stuff on CBSSports.com throughout the season. Parrish has had Houston in his top 10 for a while now. I put them in the power rankings, which is a different ranking dynamic than what GP does on a daily basis. I put Houston in my top 5 that published on Thursday because given the way that you try and assemble things with power rankings, and it's more about recent play and teams on hot streaks and all that, it's time. I mean, when you have won 27 of 28 games and you are in an obvious, undeniable multi-bid major conference, you are one of the 5 most impressive teams in college basketball. I think there are still sellers on Houston because it has not been a team that's been in the NCAA tournament with regularity. It doesn't have a Player of the Year candidate. It doesn't have a first-team All-American candidate. It probably doesn't have a second-team All-American All-American candidate. I doubt they're going to have any of those guys that are going to really flirt with top 10 status. But whatever, this team has been just tremendous all season long. Is only a four-point loss at Temple away from being undefeated. And by the way, that game was decided on a block charge decision call. So they could well be an undefeated team. Credit to them. I will not pick Houston to win the national championship, but I do think that they are capable of doing so. Would they need a break or two in the bracket? Yeah, but you know what? Many teams need a break or two to go their way in the bracket. Still, that backcourt's awesome, and it's just they're well overdue for some real widespread national respect in pub. Maybe that'll come if they win at Cincy to close out the regular season. That's a tall task to ask of them. This has been a great story, one of the best in college hoops this season.
They're 14th at KenPom. They're fourth in the net. They've got a win, and they don't have these big wins like Duke has or Virginia has, mostly because of league affiliation. You know, they haven't got the opportunities, and clearly, if they played in the ACC, they wouldn't have the same record. But you and I, we rank teams with different methods. But one of the things you and I agree on is that a lack of losses has to matter. Like just winning every time you play, or damn near every time you play, is worth something. They've got a win over the LSU team that's currently tied with Kentucky and Tennessee for first in the SEC, an LSU team that has beaten Kentucky and Tennessee. That's right?
Yes.
Okay. They've got a win at Tulsa. That might not sound like much, and maybe it's not, but Kansas State's in first place in the Big 12, and they lost at Tulsa. And so you start, like, you know, okay, these wins here don't look that impressive, but you start looking at, well, they won at Tulsa. Kansas State didn't do it. They beat LSU. Kentucky and Tennessee couldn't do it. They beat Utah State, and, you know, Utah State is in the field right now and you know, might beat Nevada this weekend. And then they haven't lost games. You know, we watch college basketball every night and on the weekends during the day. And we see wild stuff all the time. Teams losing games that they're quote-unquote not supposed to lose. For instance, on Wednesday night, you know, Tuesday night, Wisconsin goes to Indiana. Not supposed to lose that game, but they lost it. On Wednesday night, Maryland goes to Penn State. Not supposed to lose that game. They lost it. Houston hasn't lost those games. And so that's got to be worth something. You know, other good teams, other top 15 teams constantly lose road games that they're quote-unquote not supposed to lose. And Houston, with one exception, has avoided that completely. And that's super-duper impressive.
Yeah, before we get to the next game, I'll note this too. They've got 9 road wins. That's 2 more than Duke. It's 2 more than Gonzaga. It's 3 more than Michigan. It's 5 more than Texas Tech. It's 4 more than Virginia Tech. It's 4 more than Purdue. It's 2 more than LSU. It's 4 more than Iowa State. And quality of the road competition across the board won't stack up to a lot of those teams, but 9 road wins is 9 road wins, and they've got a chance when you combine road and neutral. They haven't had any neutral games yet, so the American will offer that opportunity. Could well be in a situation where they've got 12, maybe 13 road and neutral wins. If you do that combined with, say, 2 losses tops, maybe they wind up at 3. Maybe they lose to Cincinnati in the season finale. They drop to Cincinnati or someone else in the league tournament. You know what? If that happens, fine. Whatever. They're still going to have a plenty decent seed. Their overall performance is I expect them to be rewarded well. But I'm saving my other Houston argument for if they win at Cincinnati. I want to see them do that first, and then we'll circle back on this.
Number 12, Nevada, is at Utah State. Tip schedule for Saturday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on CBS Sports Network. And this is a massive, massive game. Like, if game day wasn't going to be at Houston UCF and they decided they weren't going to be at Kentucky Tennessee, I would say this is the next best place to be, and perhaps even better than those places, because you've got Nevada, which has been nationally relevant since the preseason and a power within that league, only 2 losses, both on the road, and a Utah State team that is really good according to all the metrics, you know, top 40 at KenPom. They've got an incredible record, but they do lack a signature win. And now they've got an opportunity to get one Saturday night in Logan with Nevada coming in. They're actually projected by KenPom to win the game 72-71. And so this is interesting from both sides because Nevada's safely in the field. And, you know, they're they damaged their seeding lately, you know, with the losses at San Diego State and the blowout at New Mexico. I think Jerry Palm's got them projected as a 5 seed right now. I think that's right about where they ought to be. So they damaged their seed a little bit, but Nevada, no problems. They're in the tournament. Utah State might be in a place where it needs a signature win to present to the committee on Selection Sunday, and your best chance to get one is Saturday night. Meantime, Nevada has 0 quadrant one wins. Mm-hmm. Actually, like at this moment, and this will change Saturday night, but Nevada has not even played a game that would qualify as a quadrant one game. So it's not like they're 0-1 or 0-7 against quadrant one in quadrant one opportunities. They're 0-0. They have not played a game that qualifies. So this is an opportunity for them to get what would be their best win of the season. And it's an opportunity for Utah State to get a signature win to present to the committee on Selection Sunday. Just a big game from both perspectives.
For sure. This is very interesting. I'm taking Utah State to win this one, and doing so help its case a lot, and then help the conference, but then hurt your best chance of getting a good seed with Nevada and positioning yourself as best as possible to represent the league deep into the NCAA tournament. But I will take Utah State to win this one, and this was one that I thought that they were going to win back at the start of the slate. Before Nevada had played one Mountain West game, I thought they were going to lose once in the league, and this was the one I thought they were going to lose. See no reason to step off of that at all. I hope it's a good one for the sake of the conference and for both of these teams. Like, I hope they just put on a really, really strong, good game. And you know what? If Nevada winds up winning and wins big, then that'll be huge for them, as you mentioned, with all the quad one stuff, and to do it on the road in dominant fashion, because they really need that to firmly establish themselves. Because if they get it, I just think that eventually they're going to be an interesting team to seed, because they've been in the mainstream all season, top 10 most of the season. They don't have the high-end resume stuff. The metrics, you know, they buy into them, but, you know, not all the way. They are, what, 23rd in Massey. What are they in KenPom right now, GP 22? Like, for their record, that's not nearly what you think they would be, so the computers aren't quite as big on them. So I'm definitely fascinated with that game. Again, that is a CBS Sports Network tip. Find the time, people, 8:30 on Saturday night.
I'll be different than you. I'll take Nevada on the road, although I'm probably, like, taking the underdog to win straight up. But you know how much I love my wolf pack. So I'll take Nevada on the road. But either way, that is the game, or at least one of the games, perhaps the main game I'll be watching on Saturday night. Again, tip is scheduled Saturday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It'll be on the CBS Sports Network. Before we move on, I don't think we ever actually picked Houston-UCF game. Mm. We're both taking Houston, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. I mean, we love Taco Fall, but I think we both have to take Houston in that one. The late night tip, at least for those of us in the Eastern and Central time zone, number one Gonzaga at St. Mary's. Tip scheduled for Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern. You could watch that on ESPN. Gonzaga right now is number one in the top 25 and one. And before I ask you if you think there's any chance they get caught there, just some real quick bullet point stuff on Gonzaga so people understand that, yeah, this team plays in the West Coast Conference, but man, this team is operating at a super high level. 27-2 with 11 wins over top 100 KenPom teams, among them, of course, the neutral court victory over Duke in Maui when Duke was at full strength. It is still to this day the only game Duke has lost at full strength. They are 11-2 in quadrant one / quadrant two opportunities. So that's all good stuff. Their adjusted efficiency margin is 34.68, and that ranks second nationally, only behind Virginia. And this is, to me, is what's even most impressive about that. It's 2.63 points higher than the adjusted efficiency margin they had two seasons ago when they played in the title game of the 2017 NCAA tournament. So I would just stop right there and say this. If you have to acknowledge that that team was awesome because it was literally minutes away, or perhaps a ref noticing that Kennedy Meeks is out of bounds away from winning a national championship, like, that's undeniable. Like, that happened. You can look it up. If you know that team was good enough to do that, and I'm telling you, this team has a better adjusted efficiency margin than that team, you can't really be skeptical of this team. Meantime, their only losses are to North Carolina and Tennessee, both away from home. So two top 10 teams away from home. One in a true road game, the other on a neutral court. They're undefeated at home. They are number one in the net. They've won 18 straight games heading into Thursday night by an average of 31.3 points. Got the best offensive efficiency rating in the country. And they've got a rotation that features a projected lottery pick in Rui Hachimura, a junior with the second best player efficiency rating in the country. That's Brandon Clark. Got the school all the school's all-time assist leader on the team. That's Josh Perkins. And they have, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players shooting at least 38% from three-point range. There's no way to be skeptical of that team. Now, do you think they get caught on Saturday night?
You really ran down the resume there in an entirely complete way. Save some for Selection Sunday there. No, I don't think there's any way. I'll be quick on this. And they don't even have Tilly, by the way. They've had Tilly for a handful of games. He wasn't at full strength. Killian Tilly, leading scorer from last season. Wait and see if he's able to come back with a – he's got a plantar fasciitis issue that that they don't know if he's going to return or not. Hopefully he will, but depends on, you know, how deep Gonzaga goes into the tournament. Trivia time. For Mr. Gary Parrish. Gonzaga has defeated, as of us recording this podcast, full disclosure, we are doing this prior to Gonzaga's Thursday night road game against Pacific. Gonzaga has 7 wins this season of 40 points or more. The record that I have come across over the past 30 years is 8 wins in one regular season of at least 40 points. Hmm. So if Gonzaga can do it one more time, they will match the record. Which team did it? Won a national championship.
Okay. I'm going to say it was UNLV.
Not UNLV. Just for fun, let's do 2 or 3 more. UNLV is a very good guess, but not it was not them.
Yeah. Well, damn it, because I was sure it might have been. Won a national championship, beat people by 40 times, 8 times. Is it? This is tough. Because you would think it would need to be somebody from outside of the normal power structure, like Gonzaga or Memphis and CUSA, but that never won a national championship.
That's right.
Chalmers for the tie. Dozier for the championship.
Dozier for the championship.
Dozier for the championship. Is it one of Roy's Carolina teams, one of the first two titles?
It is not, but I happen to think that if you had said the 2005 team, that would have made for a fine guess.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of.
You're starting to enter into the right neighborhood.
Okay, so one more guess. Is it? Nah, it wouldn't be them.
It's not the John Wall Boogie Cousins team.
I know they lost.
I know that's a playoff from the previous podcast.
And then to West Virginia.
Yeah.
I would say. I was gonna say maybe the first Florida team, but I don't think that's the right answer.
It is not the right answer. The answer is the 2000-2001 Duke Blue Devils won 8 games by at least 40 points that season. That was a good team, too. That whole era, you know, from 98 up through 02, Duke had really good team after really good team after really good team, but that was the only one that won a national championship. Gonzaga is going to try and match that, and if they can roll here against Pacific and St. Mary's, they do have a chance. You mentioned UNLV. They do have a chance to be as good as any team since UNLV in terms of in-conference dominance on a points-per-game margin-of-victory basis, if you follow me there. You mentioned their average margin of victory. Haven't seen any team do it over 30 a game. I don't think they're going to wind up above 30 because I don't think they're going to beat St. Mary's by more than 14 or 15 points, which is still impressive, but I don't think they're going to pull that off. I will take Gonzaga to win that game to go undefeated in the league. And in doing so, just a quick side preview, if it does that, the only other team that can do that is Wofford if it can close out. Yes, Parrish, I said Wofford. Those are the only two teams undefeated in league play. I think both of them will do that, so we have two teams without a loss in league play. And by the way, I have found, it's not hard to find, but I tracked it down. I have found our segment, our audio segment from November when you dismissed Wofford. My question is this. I really kind of want to, at some point, like, play it live on the podcast with us so we can listen back to it as it plays out and then react to it. I think that would make for some really good podcasting.
No, it would. In fact, we should hear it again. It's going to go down, I think, is one of the classic examples of this. Something that sounded exactly right when it was said and is completely ridiculous with the benefit of hindsight. Like, that, sometimes yes. That's the trick with TV, right? Because you're always asked to, like, predict and project. And, like, nobody's great at it. Like, if you were, you'd be betting on basketball games nonstop and making tons of money. The reason you lose and have to put your credit card number back in again is because nobody's really great at this. So I'll sometimes be on television and, you know, we'll be asked to make projections or, you know, predict this or, you know, who's going to win the Big 12? Is this the year? And what I decided a long time ago is it's not nearly as important to be right as it is to sound right in the moment. Just don't sound stupid. Like, have an opinion rooted in something. And then if it plays out the way you explained that you thought it would, then great. And if it doesn't, hey, that's sports. You don't need to be right. You just need to sound right and sensible in the moment. That's radio. That's television. I suppose it's the podcast as well. I say that to say this. I think in that moment when we play it back, I'm going to sound very right. And you're going to sound very wrong. But as it played out, you could not have been more right and I could not have been more wrong.
All right, we'll mix that in. Do me a favor. Don't hunt it down. I want to get your genuine reaction on the podcast when we play it back because I'm not as heavily in on what's been lost to this, and I will cop to this now. I was also in on Elon potentially being a quad 2, very much a quad 4. So the road win at Elon, not quite as good, but the Furman stuff aged pretty well. Real quick, Parrish, before
if they close this out Saturday, Wofford, with a win at Samford to finish their season in the Southern Conference, 18-0, we will bring back the clip for Sunday's Ion College Basketball Podcast.
Love it. All right. That'll be a fun little thing.
In celebration of the Terriers and Mike Young and everybody connected to that program.
Without a doubt. Before we get out of here, before you wrap up with what you want to wrap up with, I do want to give listeners a heads up on this. We're not going to preview all these games, but we're going to talk about bubble stuff on Sunday. We have to because if you're the kind of listener that's just coming aboard now because you're starting to get into college hoops, awesome. Thanks. Go rate this podcast, 5-star, subscribe, do all that great stuff. If you've been with us and always are with us, appreciate that as well. But this is the kind of the weekend where people really start to take a big bite out of the bubble stuff. There are so many interesting games. So just here are a bunch that are on the radar that's going to be tracking a ton. Furman, if it wants to still have a shot, has got to win at Chattanooga. NC State plays at Florida State. Seton Hall, Georgetown's another one. Ohio State on the road at Purdue. Iowa State goes to Texas. I have no idea what to make of Texas. They've got a fascinating resume. TCU hosts Texas Tech, so that's Tech vying for the Big 12 championship. TCU is now very much a tricky bubble team. You mentioned Bama earlier on the podcast. They host LSU, so that is a similar Tech-TCU situation where Bama, like TCU, trying to stay in the bubble mix. LSU, like Texas Tech, trying to win its league overall. And then two more to keep an eye on, host teams that are on the bubble. Clemson hosts UNC. And then Auburn hosts Mississippi State. There are even a couple more, but those are just stuff to keep an eye on. It is going to be a very active Saturday and, of course, Sunday on the bubble. And March will be here, baby. I love it.
March. I've seen my buddy John Rothstein tweeting throughout the podcast. He's got an hour-by-hour countdown right now going till March. We're now, since it's 9:43 p.m. Eastern right now, we are almost about to hit the point where we're just two hours away from
on the East Coast. For you, it's almost 3 hours.
Yeah, for me, it's almost 3 hours. But it feels like it's 4 a.m. already. I can barely hold my eyes open. I'm about to die.
Oh, yeah, hold on. So we got to wrap here, but you're basically done with the game stuff, right? Anything else you want to touch on before I got to ask you something else?
I was going to touch on Michigan, Maryland. That's Sunday on CBS, America's most watched network, America's most awarded network, the network of stars. But, like, whatever. I don't really care.
No, real quick. Real quick. No, I mean, because Maryland, well, you mentioned they lost to Penn State. What's that about? Michigan has no issues on Thursday night. They are able to beat Nebraska. And for Michigan, you know, just winning that keeps the one seed conversation alive for them. Maryland, for me, has become the team that I have a team like this. I'll seek it out. I just know it to be true. Every year there's one or two teams. I am convinced no matter what I decide to do with Maryland in my bracket, I will be wrong. If I want to try and be too smart and say, you know what, I love this team. Sweet 16, no. Elite 8, they're going to get bounced in the first round. And if I think they're going to be a first-round upset victim, they're going to win at least two in the tournament. I know listeners identify with this. Everyone has one of those teams at least every season. I'm pretty sure Maryland will be that for me because I love their talent, but they just there's no excuse for the loss at Penn State the way that it came down.
I mean, that's the thing. It's not really crazy to lose at Penn State. I mean, Michigan did it, you know, week before at some point recently. You know, Penn State's it's weird to say because Penn State has got a record of 12-16. They're 5-12 in the Big Ten. But, like, that's a quality basketball team. Like, they're top 45 at KenPom. Like, it's hard to go beat a top 45 team on the road. And so I don't really have that. I didn't freak out because Maryland lost. They got blasted.
Yes.
I mean, they didn't even show up. That was wild.
And, you know, sometimes these late February games, coaches will tell you, like, you know what? Some will say it publicly, some won't, but it's that, like, February 17, 18 into once the calendar flips to March. You're worried about the players hating the sound of your voice. The tournament's not here yet. It's the dog days. You got these weird road games. They might just check out for a week or a week and a half, and there's nothing you can do to fight it. You see this happen with certain teams just year over year over year. I'm not saying that's exactly what happened with Maryland, but coaches, by the time, like, after Valentine's Day is done, like, they are just hoping to get to March because when March comes, it's a little bit of a renewal here. You're either fighting for your life to get into the tournament, you're vying for seed position, bracketology becomes something that even the players can't avoid. And so there's a certain energy, there's a certain drive, there's a certain renewal there, but it doesn't come until usually the calendar flips to March or you're in that final week of regular season when you're having the senior nights, you're playing your rival and stuff like that. So these late February games can sometimes offer up as a trap, and you've seen that a little bit with results here. And who knows, maybe we even get a little bit of that this weekend with the bubble teams, as I mentioned previously.
You ready to get out of here now?
I am, but I first want to tell, I want you to explain to people why you slept in your car.
Because I was so tired. I was sleepy. They've got, I'm now doing these, they're called 1 minute of madness, maybe, videos for CBS Sports HQ. And I have to have them in, early Thursday, and then they just run periodically, sporadically, on CBS Sports HQ, you know, throughout the weekend. And apparently they've been doing well in terms of views and whatever. So they really want me doing these things. And so I have to write them and then record them and then send them in. It's 60 seconds of me just blabbing about a basketball game. And so I didn't have time. You know, at any point in this week, you have to wait until the teams that are playing on the weekend have played their game. For instance, I have to do one on Michigan, Maryland, like tonight, because I couldn't do it before Michigan play, because you need to know the result of that game. If you know, you just need to have all the information to make it proper. So I had to wait till last night to do some of these. Long story, not so long. We didn't get out of studio till like 1:30 a.m. You know, I got back to my hotel around 1:45, and then I had to write three of these things and stay up recording them. So I was up till like, I don't know, 4:45 or so.
How do you go from getting to your hotel at 1:45 to falling asleep at 4:45? It didn't take you to. You're like Conway at the console of the studio at like 2:40 in the morning. You're like, I'm in my moment, man. I'm in my moment. There's no shot it should be taking you that long.
Okay, here's exactly what I did. Got back to the hotel. I have to take my radio equipment because I fly there every Monday, fly home every Thursday. I have radio equipment that I use there to do my radio show. And it's like in a big case. It's like, you know, it's not the type of thing you want to travel with. So the folks at my hotel are nice enough to stash it for me every time, you know, every time I leave. So I don't have to take it back to Memphis, then back to New York, back to Memphis, back to New York. They keep it there for me. And when I check back in on Monday, they just, at this point, no, they just go and get it out of the office and bring it to me. And I never want to do that on Thursday morning because the mornings are busy. It's a New York City hotel right in Midtown Manhattan, and people are checking in and people are checking it out, and I don't want to have to wait 6 minutes to maybe get it to the person I need to get it to. So I get back to my hotel at 1:45. There's nobody in the lobby. The young lady who works there, like, we're on, I was going to say first name basis at this point, but I don't actually know her name, but she would know mine. And so I can just, like, I wave at her and I say, hey, I'm going to bring you the case down in a second. So that's the first thing I got to do. Go up to my room, pack up the radio equipment, bring it back down to her. Then I got to go back and I have to take a shower because I got makeup on and I want that off of my face as quickly as possible. So I have to do that. There's an order to everything I do. Then I have to update the top 25 in one. And I have to write a, 250 words at the top of that, new comments for the teams, because we had Maryland losing and somebody else, Marquette lost. There were actual adjustments to the ranking. So I had to do that. And then I'm listening to this new podcast, Over My Dead Body, is what it's called. And they had a new episode released yesterday. So then I was like, you know what? While I'm packing, because I pack up the night before because I don't want to, in case I oversleep, I don't want to have to do it in the morning. While I'm packing, I'll listen to this new episode of Over My Dead Body that was just released yesterday. So now that's, 40 minutes. Knock that out. Okay. And then I write these things. And what I found is, for me, 60 seconds of talking is about 215 words. So you write three of them, you're up around 700 words of script. And then you got to record them, and they have to be recorded as flawlessly as you can. So if you stumble over one word, you hit delete and start over. And by the time you look up, yeah, it's like 4:45.
You're an organized disaster, my friend.
Then I sleep till 8, so I get like 3 hours, 15 minutes. I landed back in Memphis, and then I have to immediately take anything that I planned on taking to the cleaners. I have to take it like right after I land because, because I can't. I take it to the cleaners next to my radio studio because I don't go home when I land. That would make no sense because I live south of the airport. And if I'd wait to take it to the cleaners near my home, I'm not going to get it there till Friday, and they might not have it ready till Monday, and I can't risk that. So I take it to the place by the cleaners so I can pick it back up on Friday when I get off radio. So that's a thing I have to do when I land. And then I got to the studio, and I swear to God, I haven't done this, I don't think, ever. But I parked my car and locked it and laid the seat back and just went to sleep. I just slept in my car for about an hour. That's how
I can picture it.
I realized I looked ridiculous. I got to the point I didn't even care. I just needed to close my eyes.
I'm picturing the Jim from The Office gif where he just reclines in the car, except it's you and you got your glasses on and your eyes are bloodshot because you're on 2 hours and 47 minutes of sleep. And I know you got to go on the radio show. I'm surprised that it's like the first time. I feel like that would be a once a month thing with you. So that's all.
Yeah. Well, I usually am able to sleep on the plane a little bit, but for whatever reason, I just did not sleep on the plane this morning, even though I was on no sleep. I just stayed awake the whole time and worked. And so I didn't catch any, usually I can get like an hour on the plane and that'll get me through the day. I didn't get any of that. So by the time it was 2:30 this afternoon and I had radio starting at 4:00, I was like, I set the alarm on my phone in my car for 3:30, and I was like, I'm just gonna sleep in my car for an hour. And I ended up only sleeping about 30 minutes, but still, I felt better. As stupid as that sounds, I felt better when I woke up. You should check out that podcast, though, in addition to the Ion College Basketball podcast, Over My Dead Body. Crazy story. Do you listen to any podcasts like that?
Not during the season, because I'm either doing music or I just don't have the time. I will binge. See, when college basketball is out of season, that's when I'll catch up. I'm still in the middle of season 2 of Billions. I have to catch up on shows, and then I'll get to some podcasts. So I will get to this one. You've recommended a couple of them, but without spoiling anything, give me your 200 word script word count on what exactly the premise of this is.
Okay, so there's this guy, and he's married to this woman, right? And they have 2 children, and for whatever reason, the woman falls out of love with the man, and she wants a divorce. She also wants to move. They live in Tallahassee at the time. She hates it there. She wants to move back to South Florida, like Miami, Fort Lauderdale, because that's where her parents are. The divorce gets nasty, ugly, really, really bad. The judge rules that she cannot take the kids away from the father's place of employment. He was a professor at Florida State. So she can't leave Tallahassee. All she wants to do is leave Tallahassee. She hates it there. She can't, but legally she can't move. And then out of the blue, the guy is at his house, sitting in his car, talking on the phone in the driveway. Guy comes up, pop, 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 shoots him. Dead. All right? So it seems like maybe a random act of violence. But the cops eventually trace the shooter back to, long story not so long, the woman's family, the mother and her younger brother, it appears, hired a hitman to kill the estranged husband so that then the wife could move back to South Florida where she wanted to be with the kids, because you don't have to stay near the husband if he's if he's dead. And here's the crazy thing.
And this is what you're listening to at 3 a.m. I mean, good God.
So there were two men who did this, and they've both been arrested and charged with murder. There's a woman who was the connection to the family. Basically, she worked for the younger brother, and she knew people who could do something like this or would be willing to do something like this. So it appears the younger brother, you know, worked through her. She hired these two other guys who she, I believe, is related to. They do the act. Boom. Right. They've got wiretaps on the brother's phone, wiretaps on the mom. I mean, the circumstantial evidence is crazy. The two killers and the woman who set it all up, they've all been arrested, facing like murder charges. The younger brother and the mom have yet to be arrested. And it's because the district attorney is like, we've got the case, but I get one shot at this. The circumstantial evidence is overwhelming. There's no way you could listen to these wiretaps to understand the story as it's told. There's no way the brother and the mom did not hire somebody to kill this guy. It's undeniable. But they haven't been charged with it yet because they're waiting to try to build the case and build the case. So this has been a huge thing in Tallahassee because, and in the state of Florida, because it's like well known. Like this woman's family hired somebody to kill her ex-husband, and everybody knows it, but they haven't been charged with the crime yet. And so the final episode is next Wednesday. I can't wait for it.
Now I know why it takes you so long to record that stuff. I asked for 200 words, and you gave me 475. So that's chilling, anyway. Riveting stuff. But true crime, man. That's the genre du jour. So, all right, let's get out of here. Go spend some time with your family, and we'll be back Sunday night for a podcast. There's gonna be plenty to talk about this weekend. We got a lot of stuff coming. Some interesting results, and and some good surprises on the Sunday pod.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. If you subscribe to the podcast, thank you. If you haven't, please do it. Either way, we're going to talk to you again on Sunday. Till then,